Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
D-Mace Ving in the Donick 1025-1063 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. David Janes came in during the break to let me know that we have tickets to give away. How appropriate. If you want to be caller number 4, you will win a pair of tickets to see the Predators face the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. Caller number 4. One important note. The game tomorrow, puck drop, is at 8. It's not at 7, as usual. It's at 8. Canucks and Predators tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena at 8. If you're caller number 4 at 615-737-1025, you will win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Vancouver Canucks. The Canucks coming off of a win last night in St. Louis. They've won a couple of games in a row for the first time in 2 months. A lot of stuff happening around the Canucks. It should be a very interesting game. Speaking of
what
the Predators.
What a late puck drop.
Probably because of Canada.
Yeah, it's a second game of a Canadian doubleheader, I think, with Sportsnet. Oh, okay. They're a big rights holder. And so on occasion, I think this happened one other time earlier in the season.
So Willie's going to have to stay up a little bit later.
It's not what the Predators would have chosen to do, but it's as a league, this is sometimes what you get.
It's like what happens in the playoffs, Derek, yeah, where the Predators' home games will start at 8:30 Central because they're the second half of a doubleheader that goes on at 9:30 Eastern. So same sort of thing with this situation. So 8 o'clock tomorrow instead of the usual 7. I think we have someone who's going to win. David is going to take care of that. So I heard Robbie and Joe this morning talking about something related to the Predators that I think a lot of Predators fans are getting worried about, and that is the performance of UC Saros. UC Saros this season, when you just look at the tradition, when you look at the traditional numbers, wins, saves, save percentage, goals against average, they are not what you typically see when you look at UC Saros' numbers. He is 11-19-6 this season with a .288 goals against average and .900 save percentage. So Robbie and Joe were talking this morning about how over the past couple of years, it seems that Saros is slowly declining in terms of his statistical performance. And I think, Willie, why this stands out, we've seen some bad performances from Saros lately. I also think these games recently against the Sharks, he started the first game, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct.
So the Predators are down 5-1 to the worst team in the league. And they battle back, they win that game. But Saros did not perform well at the start of that game. And he got the goal support. Well, not at the time, actually. Correct me if I'm wrong. Onanen came in the second half of that game?
Onanen came in to start the second period.
Okay.
Saros gave up 4 goals in the first period.
That's right.
And they made the switch. Onanen then gave up a goal on the first shot that he faced and then shut him out the rest of the way.
Got it. All right. So my larger point is that the numbers have not been great for UC Saros. And I heard what Robbie and Joe were saying this morning. I've done some of my own research about the performance of UC Saros this season. But let's just start here, Willie, as someone who watches UC Saros game in and game out. What are your feelings on the performance of UC Saros this season, but specifically over the past month and a half?
Saturday night, after the Predators fell behind, if you didn't watch the game on Saturday night, of course, you know, they had won, what, five in a row?
Yes.
They had come back strong to tie twice. And when they tied it at two around the midway point of the second period, I thought they had all the momentum in the game, and I thought they were on the verge of pushing past them. Then came a very shocking 3.5 minutes where they gave up three goals. So suddenly, Saros has given up five, and they could not crawl out of that hole. So the winning streak ends. And when you're in such a deep hole from the standing standpoint, even though you've won five in a row, it was just you could feel it, the weight of where you are. You would easily be able to blow that off, but it's weird to have a five-game winning streak and say, ha, you know, it had to end sometime, get back at it on Wednesday. It seemed to sting a little bit more. So I said on the broadcast, it has just been a mystifying season for UC Saros. There's been a lot of strange stuff that has gone on that has not – and there's a lot of chapters to it. I didn't think he played great at the start, the very start of the season when they lost their first four home games. Remember he missed opening night because of a minor injury. Didn't play in the first game of the year. So something went on right at the end of training camp where he wasn't completely healthy. So he got off to a bad start. Then I thought he started playing closer to his best level for a while, but he got absolutely no goal support during that stretch. Remember, they lost seven consecutive games that went to a 3-on-3. He was in net for all but maybe one of those. So they lost a lot of 3-2 games where it's the third goal being scored in the 3-on-3. But he was excellent during that stretch. Now recently, I think there's been a lot of hit or miss with his play. And he's had a couple of statistically really bad games that have sunk the overall numbers. So all that to say, the word I use is mystifying. He has not gotten into the groove that he usually gets on during the course of the season. And even last year when he struggled, I think, as badly as he's ever struggled in the first half of the year, in the second half he did go into that groove. And that's right when they got hot and went 16-0-2. There's still plenty of time for that to happen. I'm not worried about him long term, but it has not been a great season for him. But nor has it been a great season for virtually any Predator that you want to name. Just go down the list. And it hasn't been a great season. That's why they are where they are.
And Derek, I think the issue that Predators fans are having, what's concerning them about the play of UC Saros, is that he has been the least of their concerns for many years. We are accustomed to seeing UC Saros bail out this team for long stretches. The best example is the second half of the 56-game season. Halfway through that season, they looked dead in the water, and UC Saros almost single-handedly dragged that team into the playoffs. They played the Carolina Hurricanes in that series when the divisions were all mixed up because of COVID. So Predators fans are used to seeing UC Saros play as a Vezina-caliber goalie. And this season, especially lately as the team has started winning, they've been winning a lot recently, I would say, because they've been scoring a lot of goals. It hasn't been about tight defense or great goaltending. It's been about, you know, the shooting percentage finally getting to where it probably should be. So I think that's why Predators fans are concerned about where he is. And another thing that I always forget, guys, is that 8-year contract he signed hasn't even started yet. This is the final season of his previous contract. Next season starts the 8-year contract. So I think when you mix all of those things together, Derek, it leads to a situation where Predators fans, I have seen and it's been asked of me, if the Predators are having buyer's remorse signing UC Saros to an 8-year contract.
I don't think the organization is having buyer's remorse or signing remorse. Not a fan base, like you said, there may be a faction of them that, you know, are wondering, you know, was that the right move for upper management to make to sign, you know, UC to a long-term deal? But I think what happened is UC proved that he deserved a long-term deal. And the Nashville Predators honored that. You know, what are they asking UC to do? I understand it's be in net and stop opponents from scoring goals. But what defense is being played in front of them?
It hasn't been great. Exactly. Lately. That is context. Absolutely. That is important.
Exactly. So you got to, you know, like I said, in football, sometimes the quarterback gets too much of the praise. Sometimes he gets too much of the blame. There's, you know, 10 other guys on the field. And just like hockey, sometimes the goalie gets too much praise and sometimes he gets too much of the blame, because I don't think, you know, I think there are a lot of people here that love hockey, that just love the Nashville Predators because it's their team. But if you start to ask them individually, like, okay, you love your team, but can you explain like this position, what they're called to do? I don't think many people can do that. And it goes as well as the football realm. Like, people love football, but if you ask them to sort of dissect it, it's hard for them to do. So when the fan base starts to get buyer's remorse, are you looking at the other sort of context things that maybe the Predators are looking at? That's why they don't feel like they have sort of buyer's remorse in this case. But make no mistake about it, UC has to play better. He has to. If this team wants to get to, you know, where they want to go, ultimately, it may not happen this year. More than likely it won't. But next year, UC has to play better hockey. He can't be the reason why they're losing games on a regular basis. And I think fans believe, you know, especially now, yeah, the team wasn't playing well, but everyone looked at UC to be that stabilizer, and he just hadn't been that guy this season.
Dustin is in Hopkinsville on our phone line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. Dustin, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
What's up, guys? On the UC Soros thing, I said it before we signed him to the big deal. He did not do enough for me to sign him for 8 years. Pekka Rinne, that type, would get me 8 years. But we have had this conversation. This is now 2 years in a row. And what does UC Soros do in the playoffs usually? He lays a goose egg. The rest of the team does too, but he's right there with them. Okay, his physical attributes. He's a short guy. Put me out there. I'll block too. I'm 5'9", you know. But if I've got to peek around, if I'm not at least at eye level with all the players in front of me, I've already got the odds stacked against me. Why did we sign this guy to 8 years? I love Juice, the person. Love him as a player, but – man, go get a tall guy that can stretch out there. Go looking for that next Pekka Rinne. We should not assign this guy to 8 years. Also on the Will Howard thing, I've been on this guy since they played Tennessee in the CFB playoffs. I feel like he's got all the attributes that Will Levis has that are good, and he's got it between the ears, and he showed us he's going to show up in the big games every game. And someone said they got a lot of pieces around Will Howard. Are we not going to put him around a bunch of good pieces in the NFL? Let's go. Go after Will Howard. Get a bunch of draft picks. Let's start winning. And for the GM coming in, that's the best thing he can do, because if you go get a Kirk Cousins, you keep Will Howard, and you get Levis for cheap, and you get them two competing behind Kirk Cousins or whoever, Stafford, you get. It's a win-win situation. You win football now. You keep the fans slightly happy. And you don't make mistakes. Next two out are Callahan and Brooker, and you move right up, and you got the full deck of cards for you. You had a winning season. I think Will
Howard. Thank you for the call, Dustin.
Yeah, we're talking about the Soros.
I appreciate the Will Howard stuff. We can get back into that later. But before we go to break,
I want to say something quickly.
I do. Go ahead, Derek.
About UC Soros. Listen, I understand. See, this is, once again, the nuances, the thing that the average person, you know, they may not necessarily understand about hockey. For one, I think when you're a goalie, you're never eye level with anyone because you're always crouched down. So that's one. And then two, I think UC has shown enough that Listen, he's been on the Vezina trophy, the Vezina list for what, the last, minus this year,
he's
for,
been
for
what, two or three he's years? He's been up there for many years.
He's finished in the top six of the Vezina, which is the Cy Young of goalies, top six for four straight years. That is consistent elite play.
Exactly. So,
why did we sign this guy? Well, that's why. Consecutive years of finishing in the top six. That is consistent elite play.
Which means you got one of the top 10 goalies in all of hockey for the last 4 years. Everybody has sort of this rocky and down year. Every athlete, the greatest of them all, they don't have great seasons every year. What UC has to do, he has to bounce back. He has to start playing a lot better. But then two, listen, they all have to understand how this game is going to be played amongst one another, you know, based upon what Coach Bruno is teaching. It seems like from an offensive output, they're figuring that out now, hence a lot of the goal scoring. But on the defensive end, it's still slacking a little bit. So I think once they get all that together, I think you'll see a different UC Soros. I think you'll see the UC Soros, and it may be next season. I think you'll see the UC Soros that we have been seeing.
I do have some numbers that I pulled that I think are telling of this situation. I also do want to respond quickly to something. I'll do this on the other side that the caller discussed as it relates to UC Soros, because it's a common narrative in all of this. But 615-737-1025, if you have thoughts on the Predators, UC Soros, we'll get into them next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. Nashville's best deal this week is Singletree Barbecue in Murfreesboro. Singletree Barbecue is a local veteran-owned and operated business, only serving world-class barbecue with the perfect combination of sides and desserts. Get half off a $25 gift card now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan talking Predators, specifically UC Soros. Bob is in Antioch on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bob, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. What do you think the Predators should do? As they wind up this year and looking into next year, it's pretty remote that they're going to make the playoffs. So not what do you think they will do, it's what do you think that they should do in order to make the team better and the future brighter.
That's a good question, Bob. Maybe we can get to that after the UC Soros discussion, because I do think that is an interesting discussion.
Yeah, I think the reality is every time you lose a game, you come back to the conclusion it's a long shot. Tons has to go right for you to even dream about it. So at the time you have before the trade deadline, I think you have to look at yourself as a seller and with the idea that you're going to try to be a bounce-back team for next year. I think that's the mindset. It's been pretty clear. But let's get back to Staros for a second here.
So I pulled these numbers, I believe, on Sunday. So maybe the rankings changed by one or two, but not enough to change the conversation. So UC Soros, on November 23rd, home game against the then-best team in the league, Winnipeg Jets. The Predators win that game. UC Soros is in goal for that game. I wanted to pull his starts since then, because it was a nice round number. He's made 20 starts since that win against the Jets on November 23rd. Here are his numbers in those 20 starts. 329 goals against average, .883 save percentage. There have been 53 goalies in the NHL who have played at least 10 games since late November. And by games played, I mean starts, or even if they come on in relief. If they've been in a game, it counts. There have been 53 goalies who have played at least 10 games since late November, when UC Soros won that game against Winnipeg. In that two-month stretch, Soros is 44th out of 53 in save percentage, 45th out of 53 in goals against average, and 49th out of 53 in the statistic called goals saved above expected, which is a fancy way of saying that this is what goals saved above expected is, because I'm going to get into it a little bit later. Simply put, it measures the amount of goals a goalie saves based on the quality of shots that he faces. So if you think of a goalie standing on his head, making these incredible saves, saving shots that should be goals, but a goalie gets in the way, that's a goal. That's, you know, that's a goal saved above expected, and it's in percent. You know, it's in decimal points. It's very fancy. My point is that UC Soros has allowed 4.3 goals above expected over the past 2 months, which is 49th out of 53, which means based on the quality of shots that UC Soros has faced over the past 2 months, he has allowed 4.3 more goals than he should have. That's the simplest way of explaining that statistic.
Right, but what you're not pointing out is he was way up there in that stat.
He was.
Prior to that.
He was.
So if we're looking at the year as a whole, it's been up and down. So I don't want to bore people with the stats. I would say that where you get your goals saved versus expected, you will see a different number depending on the site you look at. We look at SportLogic, which we believe is the best. There are some free sites that have an attempt at goals saved versus expected or goals saved above expected. I don't think they really have it as well calculated as a paid site like SportLogic, and then there's something called Clear Sight Analytics, which I think is also on the cutting edge people look at when they evaluate goalies. So if you look at the year that Soros has had, he still is better than average for the season in goals saved versus expected. He saved 7 more goals than he should have allowed, because part of the issue is what Derek pointed out in the last segment, that Nashville as a defensive team ranks 24th in expected goals against as a defense, 24th out of 32 teams. Their defensive coverage has not been good all year long. So that's making it tougher on their goalies. And it is definitely, and here's I think where the discussion really lies, Adam. This is the main point. To whom much is given, much is expected. UC Soros has been, I would say, about league average for the year. He's had an average season. But when you invest big in a goalie, you expect more than that. And I think UC Soros would be the first to tell you that he hasn't had a great year. We are used to seeing him elevate his team, keep them afloat. I think we can look at a lot of nights where he did do that and just got no goal support.
He did that in the first quarter, first 20-plus games of the season. If not for him through late November, they would have been even further down the standings right, than they
which
are
is,
right
which
now.
Is hard to believe.
Yes.
So you did a stat of quality starts. That's another metric that people use. SportLogic has the goalies that have had over 20 quality starts. Now, he plays a lot of games, but he is one of, what, 6 or 8 goalies that have
yes, so
over 20 quality starts.
So to explain quality starts to everybody, I'll try to not make this as nerdy as possible, which is hard to do when having these discussions. As I adjust my glasses, I'm only missing an inhaler here as I'm having this conversation and a pocket protector. So a quality start is any start in which a goalie records a positive goal saved above expected. So if UC Soros plays so well that he saves the Predators an extra goal, that is a quality start. When he allows more goals than he should, that is not a quality start. Using that late November threshold that I did, 14 of his first 17 starts were quality starts, which means that he saved the Predators more goals than he should have in 14 of his first 17 starts. In his past 20 starts, he has 8 quality starts,
right,
which means 12 of 20, he has allowed more goals than he should have based on the quality of shots he's facing.
Right. But I think the other point that needs to be made in there is in the quality starts,
yes,
he doesn't have – he has a lot lower of a one-loss record than his peers in their quality starts.
Last I checked, his – win-loss record in those starts, those 22 quality starts, was 11-9-2.
Yeah, so I think he's had one more since that. I think it's 12-9-2, but that's a lot lower than his colleagues. When they have the quality start, their numbers are outstanding. They're right. Pristine one-loss record. So that's part of the reason where he has so many losses. A lot of times, it's like a pitcher who pitches a really good game but loses 2-1 because the other pitcher was a little better or they just didn't get any run support. But again, in a nutshell, he hasn't had a good year. He hasn't been bad. He's been about league average. There are a lot of circumstances. The defense in front of him isn't very good. So I would say, if I'm answering the question in a 10-second clip, he hasn't been great. The team around him hasn't been great. But I understand the question of, if you're paying for the goalie needs to elevate the rest of the team. That's where he has not done it. But do I think that there's any worry about decline in the long term? No. My money has always been on UC Saros over the long haul. There's going to be dips and ups and downs. When he goes on a roll, he is as good as any goalie in the league. He can carry you for weeks. He did it last year after struggling around this time of the year. He was having a struggle last year and then got it in gear. And it may be too late to save the season this year. But I still have, in the long term, looking at his contract, he's not that old. He stays in shape. He works extremely hard. We've already addressed the size and everything. That's not a factor to me. Let's also remember that the average save percentage goes down. So when you say, well, his save percentage has gone down, the league save percentage has gone down for a lot of reasons. That's another nerdy talk that we'll save.
I believe
he's in decline? No, I do not. I think he's in a dip.
I would quibble with one thing, and then, Derek, I want your opinion on something I'm going to present to the both of you. I would quibble with this. I think when you look at his overall season, from the start of it to now, he's probably league average. He has been below league average for the past couple of months.
Yeah, so he could be above league average for the last couple months.
I would say he was at the beginning of the season.
Well, I'm saying in the next 2 months, he could bounce back, and by the end of the year, we need to look at his numbers at the end of the year. I grant you, he's in a dip. There's no question about it.
So, Derek, this is what I would love your opinion on. Mm-hmm. Here's one thing I think I would suggest to the Predators if I had the opportunity to do so. There are roughly 30 games left in the season, 33, 34 games left in the season. This season, as we both have noted, this season is probably a lost cause in terms of making the playoffs. It is going to take something that has probably never been done for this team to make the playoffs, considering how many games they have left in the season. If I were the Predators, I would use the rest of the season, knowing that I have to worry about UC Saros, among others, next season in the first year of an 8-year contract. I would significantly limit the amount of games he plays the rest of the season. I would go to a close to, not maybe not exactly, but I would go to as close to a 50-50 split in starts as I can with Onanen. Onanen's been playing really well since he joined the Predators, in a way to sort of give UC Saros as much of a reset as he can, and not to overwork him, because that's another concern Predators fans have, mm-hmm. that they've played him too much over the past few years. I would pull back significantly on the starts that they're giving him, starts that they would normally give him. I would give a few of those to Onanen, and I would try to, as best I can, preserve Saros for the remainder of the season, so that in the first year of his new contract next season, he's back to where we all know he can be. What do you think of that idea?
I think it's a good idea in theory. It has to match what you're looking to accomplish the second half of the season. That's what it has to do. If you're not looking to, you know, get the most out of the season and make a run and cross your fingers and hope that teams above you start to lose, if you're not in that mode, then yeah, okay, let's kind of scale it back some. We feel Onanen can come in and get us some wins, so it's not like we're just completely throwing the season away, but also we get an opportunity to rest UC Saros, because he's played a lot of hockey over the last, what, 2 or 3 years. And whereas he's been good, but each and every year his goal against has gone up. This may be his worst season outside of his first season, which he only played one game, really. This may go down to, as being his worst season of all. So if that is indeed the case, allow him to rest some, and then maybe he can sort of recapture some of that, what he had at the beginning of the season, because this was a team that was fighting and they were trying to figure things out. So UC probably was in net a little bit more than what they probably wanted. And then they trade a goalie during the season as well. So if indeed your sort of plan isn't to, you know, make a run at the end, you know, hopefully cross your fingers and some teams lose above us and we got a shot at the end. If that's not your goal, then what you said, Adam, I would agree with. Allow this man to get some rest, allow Onanen to play, and it may work out for the better, because now Onanen is getting the crucial time that he needs in this league.
Let's finish on this point. No pun intended. If he were in decline, as some are worried about, why would Finland, who has a lot of great goalies, choose him to be the guy for the Four Nations faceoff? I think that tells you what they think of UC Saros. He's going to figure it out. It's disappointing, but remember, this was the lowest scoring team in the NHL until about 2 weeks ago, right? It's been a tough year for the team, and he has not elevated them, but you can go down the list one by one. Everybody has struggled. Even Philip Forsberg, who's played brilliant hockey the last month or so, is down from his production from last year. But they've got a host of problems.
But just because you may take some games away from him, and I'm talking about the Nashville Predators, I'm not even talking about the fans, you know, this would be their idea. But even if you take some games away from him, I don't think you're saying, I believe he's declining as a player. I think what you're saying is, because NFL teams do this, basketball teams do this, and I'm sure Major League Baseball teams do this. When you know that there's really no conceivable way that you're going to make the playoffs, and if you got a guy that is maybe dealing with some injuries and playing through them, but he's not playing well, and I'm not insinuating UC is dealing with something, but even if a guy is struggling a little bit, maybe you just want to sit him down for a while.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair idea if they continue to be out of it, to definitely not have him lead the league in appearances. I think that's a fair thing. I mean, they have to cross that bridge when they come to it. But I would say, if I were to give UC Saros a grade for the season, I would give him a C. And if I'm grading him on a curve, I might take a notch down just for him, because I expect so much from him. But here we are, just past the halfway point, getting close to the two-thirds part. I still think the last third could be a bounce back. I don't think there's anything issues. I don't think there's any issues with him physically. I would like to see, he's now starting to get a little more goal support. I would like to see the defensive coverage improve. That these are things that I think are important for the vision of the team next year. There was a really good article, Adam, in The Athletic, if you're into these things, of the challenges of where their roster is right now. And for a bounce back, it's not a given, right? If you look at the age of their core, of a bounce back next year, they believe they can do it, but there's a lot that has to be determined between now and the end of this season as they make their moves.
615-737-1025. Predators and Canucks tomorrow at 8. I stress again, 8. Puck drop at 8 tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Also, I would like to give a hearty congratulations to Craig Aukerman, who has a job. Craig Aukerman hired by the Miami Dolphins. Congratulations, Craig. We knew that you would not be out of the NFL for long. Jared Stillman's favorite punching bag back in the NFL. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, speaking of things on the text line, I saw something on the text line yesterday as we were discussing Shedeur Sanders that got me thinking. And I want to hear what specifically Derek has to say about it. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Glad we could sneak some Predators talk into this, but let's get back to the NFL draft. We spent a lot of time yesterday talking about Shedeur Sanders, who met with the Titans at the Shrine Bowl. He didn't practice at the Shrine Bowl. He didn't play in the Shrine Bowl, which I think is Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. But he did meet with the Titans. We heard some of the things he had to say. We talked to Teron Davenport, who was at the Shrine Bowl. But while we were having this conversation, Derek, we had one texter who kept texting in, and I monitor the text line, and I did not respond to the texter, but it got me thinking. And the texter said, why are we spending so much time talking about Shedeur Sanders as the number one overall pick? What has he won? What has he done to deserve to be the number one pick in the draft? So it got me thinking again, as I said, and I just decided to look at the win-loss records of quarterbacks selected number one overall in the draft since 2015, since it was 10 years ago. I thought that was a nice sample. These were the quarterbacks who were drafted number one overall since 2015. Jameis Winston, Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, Bryce Young, and Caleb Williams. A nice sample, wouldn't you say? A nice mix of quarterbacks. So I went and looked at their records as starters in college and any other accolades they earned during their collegiate career. Let's start at the top. Let's start with Jameis Winston. Does everybody remember that Jameis Winston went 26-1 as a starter at Florida State?
Oh, yeah.
He won the Heisman Trophy and the national championship. A celebrated collegiate career for Jameis Winston. Do either of you know what Jared Goff's record at Cal was as a quarterback before being taken number one in the draft?
I don't think I watched Cal play when Jared Goff was the quarterback.
It's got to be good, right?
He went 14-23 as a starter at Cal.
Cal wasn't good.
He went 14-23 as a starter at Cal. I know this is simplifying this conversation to its smallest possible form. I think we would all take Jared Goff over Jameis Winston right now. I think that would be pretty fair. So I'm looking at Shedeur Sanders. So Colorado went 13-12 in two seasons with Shedeur Sanders and, of course, Deion Sanders coaching the program. Now, if I recall correctly, the year before the Sanders family arrived, Colorado went 1-11, if I have that
right. I believe
correctly.
That's right.
You are correct.
So they went 13-12, Shedeur Sanders and Deion Sanders, together in two seasons at Colorado. Colorado was 1-7 over those two seasons against ranked opponents. So 13-12 overall, 1-7 against ranked opponents. He did go 23-3 at Jackson State. Now, of course, it's a much different caliber of competition at Jackson State than it is at Colorado. And even then, the caliber of competition at Colorado isn't the same that Jameis Winston faced at FSU or Joe Burrow faced at LSU or Trevor Lawrence faced at Clemson or Bryce Young at Alabama. So there you have to factor.
It's a slight notch down.
Yes.
It's a diluted conference that isn't quite the powerhouse that maybe it was a decade ago or two.
So I even looked at Cam Ward because I didn't want to pick on Shedeur Sanders. Cam Ward with Miami this past season, they went 10-3. Great start. Fell apart down the stretch, missed the college football playoff. I believe he spent two seasons at Washington State before transferring to Miami. Washington State went 12-13 in those two seasons where Cam Ward was their primary quarterback. So all of this is to say, Derek, when evaluating a quarterback's capabilities, how much should their collegiate accomplishments, specifically wins and losses, championships, Heismans, whatever, how much of that should factor in to figuring out if a player is worthy of being the number one overall pick, a quarterback specifically?
Listen, the Heisman shouldn't be a part of it because there's only one guy every year that can win the Heisman. And frankly, we understand sometimes, you know, quarterbacks have won the Heisman when they frankly shouldn't have.
I was shocked, by the way. I should have remembered this, that Trevor Lawrence did not win the Heisman Trophy.
No, he didn't. He didn't win Heisman. So, you know, whether it's the Heisman Trophy, whether it's a national championship, I don't think you can, you know, make your evaluation on whether a quarterback is good or not because he's not winning individual accolades or he's not winning the national championship. You know, there are a bunch of quarterbacks that hadn't won a national championship, but then they got in the NFL and they were highly, very successful. The greatest quarterback of them all right now, Tom Brady, he didn't win the national championship. I don't even think he came close to a national championship, if I recall, because they won it with Woodson, but he wasn't there. That was long ago. I don't think he won the national championship.
No, they did not win the national championship. Yeah, I think he played in the Rose Bowl one time against Alabama, if I'm not mistaken. Was that the Sean Alexander? He shared time. Remember, Drew Henson was there.
Absolutely.
He was a good college quarterback for sure, but certainly wasn't like Trevor Lawrence in the mix for national titles every year that he was.
So, by the way, so these are the college records. These are the college records for the quarterback selected number one overall since 2015. Jameis Winston, as a starter at Florida State, 26-1, won the Heisman, won the national title. Jared Goff, 14-23 as a starter at Cal. Baker Mayfield, 34-6 at Oklahoma. Kyler Murray, 12-2 as a starter at Oklahoma because he started just one season. Joe Burrow, 25-3 at LSU. Trevor Lawrence, 34-2 at Clemson. Bryce Young, 24-3 at Alabama. Caleb Williams, 18-8 at USC.
So I would look at those standpoint and say there's not much of a correlation, D-Mace. Not much of a correlation between wins and losses in college and your success in the pros.
Exactly. Whether you won a lot in at the college level as a quarterback or you didn't. Did you do the things or are you doing the things that are necessary that is going to allow you to excel in the NFL? If you're doing those things, then okay. But it's not like Shedeur Sanders if you look at it. He's been the reason why they've lost games. You look at the Kansas game. He threw for 3 touchdowns, no interception, 23 for 29, 266 yards. They lost that game 31-21. Then go to Kansas State, 31-28. He threw 3 touchdowns, had an interception, almost threw for 400 yards, 34 for 40. Is that his fault? And he was sacked 6 times. Is that his fault? No, it's not his fault. He did everything humanly possible to win a football game that they ultimately didn't win. So, again, it's all about the nuances. If you're just going to look at the wins and loss records, then you might as well not draft half of these quarterbacks that get drafted, especially in the first round. You know, you can go to Josh Allen. He didn't have a great career in college when it comes to wins and losses. Look at him now. So I know we're talking about number one picks, but when you turn on the film, if you are drafting number one and you're looking for a quarterback and you've earmarked one or two guys like as they are doing now, turn on the film. If he's checking all the boxes that you need to be checked in order to draft a guy number one, then you know what? If y'all all in an agreement, then you draft that guy not based on whether, you know, he won games or national championships or not. Are you turning on the film and is he the reason why they are winning games? And he's not the reason that they are losing games. And he's doing the things that you're asking him that he needs to do in the NFL. If you see that in him, then you draft him. I don't care if he won a national championship or a Heisman or not.
By the way, of all of those quarterbacks, Willie, that have been drafted number one overall since 2015, Jared Goff is the only one that didn't win a Heisman Trophy or a national championship. All of the rest won both or one of the two. Goff is the only one that didn't win any of them.
I go back to a year that we discussed backwards and forwards because the Titans had the 3rd pick. And it was the year where we had that epic championship game between Texas and USC. The loaded USC team with Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, all those guys, Lendell White. Just a stacked Pete Carroll group against Vince Young and Texas. Another stacked roster with all kinds. And it was one of the greatest college bowl games, or, you know, championship games of all time, and Vince Young was the star. Both Matt Leinart and Vince Young were high first-round picks. So was Jay Cutler, who had played in front of our eyes for 4 years at Vanderbilt and taken his lumps on a program that was at the bottom, even by Vanderbilt status, at the bottom when Bobby Johnson took over. Like, he picked up the pieces for Woody Woodenhofer after the wheels fell off of his group. So in the context, on the surface, if you just go by the accolades, like, why would you take Jay Cutler over Matt Leinart or Vince Young? But we discussed it a lot. And as it turned out, all these years later, Jay Cutler had a better NFL career. I don't think it's arguable. A better NFL career than Vince Young or Matt Leinart. And it really wasn't even close. So again, this is I thought Tim Hasselbeck had some great insights on Will Howard, who, when you play with a loaded roster around you, your job should become easier. There's a lot of good things that go with it, but it also does make your life easier as a quarterback. You should succeed more than a guy who's playing around a roster that has a lot more challenges.
615-737-1025. I read something interesting about the quarterback position in the Washington Post. Not normally a sentence you hear when we're talking about sports reporting, but I thought it could lead into an interesting discussion about what the Titans could do at quarterback. That's coming up next. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.